And we're dealing with the historical facts.
Radio.
Don't get upset with me about the historical facts. Don't jump up in my face about, but I don't believe that. We are not talking about it.
We are the champions.
simply a black revolutionary. After we have done that, we will go into the Bible itself and some other historical documentation, and we will establish that he was, in fact, involved in the movement of that day. At least he acted like it, and that he was, in fact, a black man involved in the revolutionary movement that the little kingdom of Judea was involved in as it was caught up in a life-and-death struggle with the white Roman Empire. Then, if time will permit, we will go into some contradictions in the New Testament relative to his arrest, conviction, and execution, assassination. But if not, at least you'll know where I was trying to get to, and we will cover as much as we can. We still together? All right, let's begin now with Sister Frances Welton. She says this, long before there is true understanding, there is for even the very, very young child, a participation in the practice of God's recognition. This participation in practice becomes a part then of the child and ultimately the adult concept and image of self. Of what? It is from this self-image and self-concept that evolve all patterns of behavior. That the determination of mental health or mental illness is made. Reflection, one's reflection of oneself and group respect and respect for harmony in the universe is also contingent on this factor. Now, let's do what we say in the seminary, an exegesis of the text. Let's exegesis the text that has been presented to us in this sacred writing of Dr. Frances Welton. She says, now, before you understand anything else in your life, before you're cognizant of anything else, the first concept or thought that is implanted in your psyche is what? God. Something relative to God while you're still in your mother's womb, whatever your mother's attitude or the community around you, attitude or concept or imagery is of a God force in the universe, it's been injected into you while you are still in the development stages of your mother's womb. As your mind began to formulate, as the melanin began to grow and develop within you, and that divine intelligence that comes from the center of the universe that makes us so special as a people, there is automatically inherent within that a concept about a God force or divine force in the universe. We're born with it. We have it even before we're born. It's very natural to African people to think in those terms. They feel a connectedness with the universe that is beyond and above that which they can understand in their human experience. Therefore, the quest of most African people throughout our history has always been to travel a path that will bring us in closer connection with that divine intelligence in the universe. We have expressed it in a multiplicity of ways, and we still do. But we don't deal with the road. We deal with the what? The objective of where we're going. Now, we're born with this. We have this before we get here. And therefore begins our participation in the practice of a recognition of a God force in the universe. It's just not natural for most black people, I'm not telling you what to believe or what not to believe in the divine intelligence. In the universe, we're just that way by nature. But I'm not saying you're bad if you don't. I'm just saying that's natural for most African people. That says that this participation in practice becomes a part then of the child and ultimately the adult concept of themselves. In other words, your concept of yourself is directly related to your concept of God. Say that again. Every human being's concept, and I'm talking about particularly our people, African people, is directly related to their understanding and concept of God. Because they seek to live that out in their lives. Therefore, your behavior and all of your thoughts are governed by your sacred concept of this God for the divine intelligence in the universe. Y'all still with me? she says it is from the self-concept that all patterns of behavior are established. Also, your relationship as to how you will treat yourself and how you will treat the group that you come from and the people around you. Anyone, therefore, that will destroy themselves with drugs or any other type of negative self-destructive behavior, therefore has a concept of God that is obviously erroneous. Because if they had the proper concept of the God force in them, they would be acting out that force in them and therefore could not destroy themselves. They could not do that. Goes on, and we're going to establish why. And I mean, seem like the people who can profess God the most, that do more shouting in church than anybody, and even can do more salammed up stuff, can do some of the most negative things. Why is that? When your God concept is the governing factor of your image of yourself, and therefore your relationship to those who produce you and you relate to and live around. All right, we're moving on, man. We'll discuss that. I've seen young men that I've had to counsel who were involved in gang war. I have walked in the middle of gang wars in Richard Allen City, Miss Thomas, Philadelphia. I've walked in the middle of them to stop them from hurting one another. And both of them stand on each side with crosses on. With a killed one walk past the passenger. The Lord's Prayer definitely got to soak the cross. Something's wrong with their concept of God. When you can destroy yourself, we don't have the right to tell anybody how to believe or to practice their relationship with their creator, but we can identify that something is wrong if your relationship with your creator is permitting you to destroy yourself. One time I was having such trouble breaking up a gang war that I went back in the house and put on the collar. I'm there. They wouldn't take it, but I have a dashiki and everything. Come on, brother, we can't believe it. That was good. They all, I almost got wiped out. Security had to check me. I said, man, I got the answer to this. I went and put my collar on. I came back out, man. They backed on off. Yeah. They had more respect for this white man's collar than they had for me. That's because something was wrong with their God recognition. Therefore, it has affected itself. You'll see where I'm going with this in a minute. He goes on and says, the global system of white supremacy, oppression, and domination developed a religion called Christianity. Uh-oh, please protect me. We're secured. We're not attacking your belief system. We're not attacking your belief system. However, this is a historical fact. There is a qualitative difference between the Christianity developed on the African continent and that developed by Europeans. They are diametrically opposed from this. Get my take. Black
and Mike. I'm talking about divine healing. I'm talking about the word to heal you.
Start back on the life of Jesus. Volume 1 and Volume 2. I get right on into that. I was Romans came in, not with no Septimus, Leon, and all that praying and stuff. They came in with God and took it and recast it in the image of white supremacy and took the most sacred and revered icon, which is the black Messiah child and of Jesus as a black man, and hid them away so that they could have the magic of healing. Think about the psyche of the people you're dealing with, but we don't care about them. Let's get back to it now. But they developed this global system of white supremacy, developed the religion and called it Christianity because Jesus knew nothing about Christianity. There was no Christianity in Jesus' sake. Jesus was a Hebrew, and what he founded was the Nazarene Party. He had no idea of founding a religion. If Jesus were to come back today and you asked him where his church, most of y'all saw him at the church in the first place with them dreadlocks and them sandals, dusty looking prophet that he was, y'all would be wanting him in your church. But if you allowed him to come in, you asked him if he was a Christian, if he was saved, he would have no idea of what you were talking about. Because such concepts did not exist while Jesus was alive. Even in your Bible, in the book of Acts, it tells you they were not called Christians until Antioch. At least to the assassination of Jesus. Talking about historical facts, man. Don't get mad, please. But even if you get mad, don't stop loving me. And you owe it to yourself. You look, you hear this. It's as if there is nothing else that could possibly be talked about, thought about, or presented about Jesus other than that which 50,000 preachers run on Sunday morning every Sunday. The same old idea and concept with no historical basis. And we just follow right on behind it. And they get richer and wealthier and we stay in the same condition. If your church is not committed to the upliftment and upgrading of your community, if that money is not going to enhance the quality of life in your community, then you have to rethink, as Brother Malcolm, peace be upon him, said, your religion and your concept of Jesus. Very fundamental. How these Negroes walking around here talking about they follow Jesus when history and the Bible tells everywhere the man went, he took care of the needs of people. Even the preachers of his day got mad, say, he's getting more, he's got a popular move, folks say he's coming to the synagogue no more. This black man got folks going to church out on mountainside, feeding them fish and bread and stuff. We can't feed them. We do that, them Romans come in and tear the synagogue down. But I'm moving a little ahead of myself now. But he developed this religion called Christianity, But there's really nothing Christian about it if you go even with the basic Christian principle. Most fundamental and absolutely critical to the white supremacy system of religious thought was the formation of the image of a white man as the Son of God. Therein lies pride. Our God recognition is recognizing a lie. Something that is not true. Goes on to tell us, this white male image was then referred to as Christ. It doesn't matter that the prophet Jesus was a black man, which we have proven historically over and over again. I'm not going into that tonight. I got it on the tapes out there. You know I've been over that time and time again. So we got to move on with the material tonight. But he says absolutely critical. White supremacy could not exist. It could not exist. They could not control us if they had not gotten us strung out on a false premise about God. As Dr. Clark, a Grand Old Scholar, tells us, they came here with a false idea about God and have never acted godly. Never acted godly. Therefore, with this image of white supremacy, that which whether we recognize it in a superconscious mind or not, it's certainly recognized deep within our souls and our subconscious mind. We know that white supremacy is destructive to us. Therefore, when we embrace it as a God, destructive to our sin. You understand what's being said here? Okay, a few more things. I'm moving on. I've got to keep making sure you're with me now. Thus, any person accepting the Christian religion, whether conscious of it or not, not all of us are conscious of it, has the image and concept of God as a white man. And y'all be telling me, well, see, I don't think of God as this. It's sad to say, I don't put a white one down and put the black one up. Put the black one in your Bible. Put the black one on your car if it don't make a difference. Tell the truth. What did Jesus say? You should know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Truth meaning according to the facts. So put the factual one if it don't make it. The only time you start arguing about it don't make a difference is when we start talking about the reality historically that Jesus was a black man. Then you get the scratch in your head and going through all kind of problems. Well, we don't want to talk about color. We don't want to. Well, then stop reading the Bible then. Revelation's first chapter, you know it, 13 to 15 verse. If I'm wrong to talk about color, then the Bible's wrong to talk about color. Thus, any person accepting the Christian religion, whether conscious or not, has the image and concept of God as a white man. With this unconscious God is a white man logic circuit securely implanted. Check that out. Let me read that one more time. relationship with this unconscious. God is a white man logic circuit securely implanted. That means they have done a surgical job on your mind by misusing your spirituality and coming at you with religion and took your spirituality or much of your spiritual identity from you and replaced it with religion. And those two are separate things. Very separate. Got you all strung out and fighting over religion. The power is in your spirituality, which means your connectedness, your awareness of your connectedness with the universe. And as securely implanted, the message becomes very clear. The white man, as God the Father, is supreme, perfect in power and goodness from whom all blessings flow. Therefore, you're afraid to fight him. You ain't going to try to fight God. That's why there's such a fear to get up and fight him. You don't want to fight God. You don't want to anger God. You don't want to upset God. You think he's God. And no matter what he does to you, and he's done the worst things that any human has ever done on the face of F human, he can be indeed called, and I know some of y'all don't like to hear me say that, but I like that term Dr. Patricia Newton said, that massive undeveloped protoplasm, which is what he is. As human is, as human does. Human from humus, man. Man from the humus, from the soil, from the dark soil that contains all the elements that make up the human body. Is you with that? Understand what I'm saying to you? But so that I will not, I don't care really. Some of my brothers and sisters don't think I'm being mean by not referring to them as a human. I have to go, as I said, by the true, as Jesus said, by the what? Fruit of the tree shall you know. So we're afraid to confront him. We're afraid to deal with him because we believe that we're dealing with God. And no matter how bad, no matter how bad he treats you, you believe that somewhere among them has got to be a good one that's going to do us right, because the Son of God was good. So some one of them got to be good. So you will take any abuse, any punishment, go on for years and submit yourself and your children to the worst ways of life, believing that somehow some white man will come and save you, because 2,000 years ago one died on the cross for you and saved you from your sins, even though your life ain't worth a dime today. Even though the rest of the world, those that have power in the world, are doing fine and you still running so far behind, yet you saved. That 2,000 years ago, this white man defeated the devil on the cross, yet the devil has committed the worst crime that anybody has ever committed on the face of the earth, which is the African slave trade and the invasion of the African continent. There is no crime to measure up to that. Now, if the devil was defeated, how did he come out of the ring defeated? When Muhammad Ali knocked the sucker out, he was out. Who won the fight? If Jesus knocked the devil out, I want to know why he's still so active. Hey, that's a question that young people are asking today. Don't get on your high, arrogant horse and talking about, well, he's talking against my faith and my belief, and why won't you go? You almost come back to the church. You got to start talking with some logic to make some sense to them. I guess I ain't going to be able to make a living, Brother Austin. Therefore, it can be said that all black and other non-white Christians worship the white man as God. That's the thing. One of the things we must keep in mind. A few more things on that, and then I'll get to the other aspects of the message. Jesus said, this is what Dr. Francis Wilson recommends. First, blacks and other non-white peoples should begin to consciously practice the removal, the what? Of this white image of the Son of God from their brain computers. We got to talking about the black. I thought this issue was settled 30 years ago. We had a couple of black society in Vatican City. Now, y'all know where that is. So I ain't going to call it what they call it. We had, you know where Vatican City is. Well, you think about it then anyway. You know you're here. We have the temple of the black society there that went up, what, in 1969. We preached this strong. I mean, it was going good. There was a shrine of the black Madonna. Reverend Jeremoji. He was spreading the word about the black Messiah and the black Magadha. I said, well, we don't settle that. We can move on now. This ain't no more to talk about this. We done proved that thing you can prove. 30 years later, it's still a question. 30 years later, it's still a question. Therefore, we still have the job of removing from our brain computers this image of white supremacy of Jesus as the Son of God. One group, one religious group, in opposition to us just stating the fact what the Bible and history has said about Jesus, was marching around saying, let's get rid of all images. Are you going on a campaign to do that for all the things black folks can fight this system about? Why are you going on that campaign? Because if you take down every white Jesus in every white church, you still gonna have it well in the brain computer. That's where you have to get rid of it. Because your image is merely a reflection. The images that you create are merely reflections of what? What is in your mind. Y'all still all right? Am I boring you? Okay, y'all let me know about the time now. Okay. Secondly, blacks and other non-whites must practice utilizing their energy crystallizations, that is their bodies, as direct connections with the cosmic, that is God force, the source of all energy. This means that we must learn to use our personal antennae to connect up with the true source from which all energy and power flows. No, you can't do that. You got to have a priest. You got to have a preacher. Somebody that you pay to make connection with your God that revealed itself to you while you were in your mother's womb. That's because you're trying to connect up with somebody else's God. If you're trying to connect up with yours, you don't need nobody to do that. Spiritual direction, spiritual help, spiritual advice, yes. But nobody can stand between you. And the white boys really came up with that. We are the mediators between. And I mean, they cooked up a hierarchy. There's God, and there's Jesus, and Jesus is the mediator for the world, and then he had to come down and get some priests to be mediators for him. When do I make the connection? I like that song that the old folks used to say. God is still on the throne. Within your bosom, you have a telephone. And that's how I look at it. When I want to talk to the Creator, I dial the number. It's in my bosom, the telephone. Now, I'm not putting down spiritual people who function as spiritual authors who serve the community, who do what? Because as Jerusalem Slim said, those who would be greatest among you must be your. If you ain't serving, you ain't great. That's the road to greatness. If there's no service, there's no greatness. Okay, y'all still with me? So we got to have that personal connection. Let's dispense with the idea of religion right now. I'm not telling you to go back to your church and that's it. But right now, I want you to dispense with the whole idea of religion and everything. And just think about, I want to make my personal connection with my Creator, with the divine intelligence in the universe that call all life and energy into being. That's the first thing I want to connect up with before I try to name it anything. I want to make sure I got that hookup. And you can only have that in your black self, for that is your experience, the African experience. So you have to come at it in that direction. Are you with me? By so learning to tune into the cosmic energy source, it is possible to find the purpose of one particular energy configuration. Every one of us have a divine purpose for being on this planet. Most of us live and die and don't even know why we're here. And when you don't know why you're here, and you don't know what your Nia is, what is that, the sixth principle of Nguzan Saba, your purpose is, the fifth principle of Nguzan Saba, then you do what? Serve somebody else's purpose. But a purpose will be served. I like to serve my purposes and the purposes of my people. The particular energy configuration of one's body to tap into and use that source of cosmic energy for constructive purposes. All too often, we are not connecting our own personal energy configurations directly into the cosmic energy source, and consequently, the results have been catastrophic. I'm going to close out there. Thank you so much, Sister Francis, for helping me out here. I appreciate it. Now, let's start getting more into the man, Jesus himself. I had to lay a solid groundwork there, Sister Zayed. Had to lay a solid ground foundation. And I guess that's part of the problem of being a preacher and a professor. It kind of gets mixed up a little bit sometimes. I'm going to read from Hugh J. Schoenfield, European writer, from his book, The Passover Plot. And I think it's apropos to this subject. He says, far too many Christians do not know God in any other way than through Jesus. And I really would like to just think to that effect. We get arrogant about it, too. I don't like the way the Christian religion puts that. There's no other name under heaven by which you may be saved. That's arrogant. That was put in there in the 4th century. What did I say? The 4th century. 400 years after Jesus. It was put in there because those Europeans controlled the world through their military adaptation of through the Roman Empire that was falling through their co-optation of Christianity. At the Council of Nicaea in 325 of the Common Era, they decided there's no other name under heaven by which you may be saved. This was decided by white men. Not by Jesus. Not by the apostles. Not by Almighty God, but by white men. And you go around with that so arrogantly, beating each other down. There's no other name by which you may be saved. But them Muslims, don't you think I ain't got something to use? There's no other God but Allah. And Muhammad is his prophet. Even so far as accept Islam or die. I'm talking about the history now. No, no. You're not serving God when you do this. You're serving your own ego or the ego of some group of people who wanted to control large groups of people. You don't believe in Jesus, then you're godless. Foolishness. He goes on to say, take away the deity of Jesus and their faith in God is imperiled or destroyed. A lot of reasons why people don't want to face to deal with the historical Jesus is they're afraid it will affect their relationship with God. If I don't believe what I've been taught all these years, if I don't hold on to that, I'm going to lose my faith in God. That should say something to you right there. If your faith in God is predicated on a doctrine rather than your actual spiritual relationship, now you really got to reexamine that. I hope you know, this type of thing is very important to us now because the changing of the God is at hand. White boy's power is going down. He's scrambling hard, but he's going down. We are being called up to power. But there are some very major corrections that have to be made before we can take that power, and we're only a stone throw from that power, but we got to make some mental changes, some psychological and spiritual changes. And to do that, we must eradicate the corrosion that has been placed upon our brain computers and our spirit, the weight placed upon our spirit. When these white folks placed that weight on our spirit, it separated us from a direct line that we had always had with our Creator. Therefore, we ceased to accomplish things on the great level that we had before they interrupted our spiritual, mental, and physical development on this earth. We must remember that. And again, I must, at the risk of being redundant, say that most everything you know about Christianity was learned on the plantation first. So basically, it's a plantation theology. Oh, Lord, I'm in trouble now. I can't say it. Because Jesus is not worshipped, he is not thereby invariably played down or diminished in effectiveness. Rather, we should be strengthened and encouraged because he is bone of our bone and flesh of our flesh. The mind that was in the Messiah can therefore also be in us. There's a question that many young people ask me, and I tell them, you go ask the preachers because I have my answer. And I share my answer with them. I say, now you go to the preachers and you find out. This is a question, and listen seriously. If Jesus, I'm talking about the real one now, the black man, hanging on the cross was in fact God in the flesh. Is that not what fundamentalist Christianity teaches? Is that not what all Christian doctors teach? Of all of the 500 some different denominations, is that not what it teaches? If he was God and the Romans killed him and the Romans being men who is the greater? How can a man kill God when all of the earth is dependent upon the divine intelligence and God force in the universe to sustain it? And if that force is cut off for one iota, then all energy ceases to be. But you tell me a white man, a group of white men, killed it on a cross. 3 hours. Some say for 6 hours. The New Testament is definitely not really sure how long God was dead. But he resurrected, Brother Shaka. If he died for even a minute, the resurrection wouldn't mean anything. Do you understand the logic in this? I mean, this is the kind of logic these young people have. And we'd be telling them, well, that's of the devil. That's not of God. That's sinful for you to think like that. And you're losing them because you're not coming to them logically. All right, let me go a little bit more. I've got to get into this revolutionary here. The only way in which we can hope to know the real Jesus is by first becoming conscious of him as a man of his own time, country, and people. And that's what, for the few brief moments I have left, I'm going to deal with. The Jesus of history can be more correctly known only by those who are willing to see him as a Hebrew Messiah. And that's the first thing you got to understand. He was not a Catholic Messiah. He was not a Baptist Messiah. He was not a Methodist Messiah or a born-again Christian Messiah or a right-wing fundamentalist Messiah. He was a Hebrew. Plain and simple. Before Michelangelo, any of the Italians or the Dutch or anybody decides to paint him differently, that is what he was. Now, Justinian II knew who he was. Put him on his money. He was bound down to a black man. Put a picture on the tape out there. I verified it when I was in England. It's there. It's there. That coin, going back to the 8th century. White folks knew who they were worshiping. That's strange how that thing went, too. They started out worshiping you, now you're worshiping them. Good stuff. Woo! The only way in which we can hope to know the real Jesus is by first becoming conscious of him as a man of his own time, country, and people. The Jesus of history can be more correctly known only by those who are willing to see him as a Hebrew Messiah. The gospel writers tried to tone down the national and political implications of this cardinal doctrine, but they still affirmed it. Now, I was going to try to read some other material, but I'm going to go into the text in a minute. In the book, Jesus and the Zealots by Hugh J. Schoen, Dr. F.G.F. Brandon at Manchester University. Many see the white theologians be reading all this stuff. Black theologians can't even touch this. Baiting this issue. Black preachers, they don't want to bait this issue. They don't want God to strike them with lightning. And as Sister Frank said, with a brain computer, because they don't want a white man to strike them with light. It's forbidden for black people to discuss this. But the gospel writers tried to cover up the fact that Jesus was a revolutionary. But we're going to go in those gospels and show that even though they tried to cover it up, it came out anyway. Why did they try to cover it up? First of all, brothers and sisters, listen to me now. There was no gospel written. Word gospel meaning what? Good news. Deal with that in a moment. But in this instance, biographies on the life of Christ. There were no gospels written while Jesus was alive. What did I say? There was not one word written, maybe in the Roman newspaper. Suetonius and Tacitus was supposed to have written something. But no Hebrew wrote anything about him while he was alive. It was some 40 to 50 years after his death that they began to write about him and try to remember what they had heard. And they had only stories that had passed from one group to the next. First gospel to be written, although it is not in that order in the New Testament that we know of, is the Gospel of Mark, written somewhere between 65 and 75 of this era. There were at least 70 gospels written. Only four of them survived because they were the four that the bishops at the Council of Nicaea figured they could edit and twist to suit their doctrine. of Mary, the Gospel of Philip, that speaks about Jesus being married. And you've got to get that tape I got back there, The Marital Life of Jesus and His Son Barabbas. They had to take those out because it didn't go along with the doctrine. They were killing people for even reason back then, but that's another story. I discussed that on the African origin of the Christian church. Now, the Gospel of Mark was written almost immediately after the fall of the capital of the Judeans, the Hebrew Israelites, the African Israelites, in 70 of this era. They had begun another rebellion of the many rebellions they had against the Romans. They had another rebellion in 66 of this era. And for 4 years, they declared themselves free and independent of the Romans. The Romans came back with the 10th legion, the leopard men, out of Africa. They used Africans to destroy Africa. Does that sound familiar? White folks can't take us on their own. I tell you, white folks, they said, the reason why a white man won in Africa, they had guns. There wasn't what? 60 million white people in all of Europe at that time. And Africa had hundreds of millions of people on it. Except every white person in Europe had a gun. They couldn't have took Africa. Right. So they had to use Africans to take Africa. Learn from that. So here they used Africans against Africans, and they destroyed the city of Jerusalem and scattered them all over everywhere. Now, some of the white folks who were unhappy with the Roman Empire and were looking for a new philosophy had been led by the Apostle Paul, who was a traitor to his race, who wanted to be a Roman rather than a Hebrew, but that's another story. They had adopted what they called, eventually, Christianity. But the prophet of it had been crucified as a rebel. That's what the record says. Deal with that in a minute. Now they were caught up with the problem because the Romans were identifying them with the rebels in Jerusalem. So when the Gospel of Mark was produced in Rome, it was an apologia. Laying the blame of it all on the Jews and on the Jewish rebels, and saying that Jesus was innocent of the charges brought against him, and that the Jews had caused him to be killed. The gospel writers tried to tone down the national and political implications of this cardinal doctrine, but they still affirmed it. It simply could not be eradicated. But every step they took to depict Jesus in another guise took them further from him. We cannot now find him again by falling into the same error. One more statement from Jesus and the Zealots, and then we get into the text, and we'll be coming on down the line. Jesus and the Zealots by S.G.F. Brandon says this, the very first paragraph in the very first chapter of the book states very clearly, ironic though it be, the most certain thing known about Jesus of Nazareth, the most what? Everything else is a matter of belief and speculation. Only thing, Brandon said, this is a white Christian theologian. He says the only thing we know certain about Jesus is that he was crucified by the Romans as a rebel against their government in Judea. Crucified as a what? That's what the record says. That's what it says. And even the New Testament tells you that there was a charge brought against it. What was the charge? He stirreth up the people, which in today's words would be what? Troublemakers, terrorists, inciting to riot. That's what the Romans charged him with, and that's what they killed him for. They didn't care.
This is divine healing tonight. Said tonight, divine healing. I want to thank these professors are coming forth. But I want to say to you, thank you, Mary. Thank you, every telephone, every call. Brother Jerry, thank you for your call. Been a little under weather. Prayer until you give me a call. But this is what I want to say to you. I said, God, give me that information. What's going on with the world? I was kind of upset. Then the ancestors come. Sister Lily came to me. Sister Powell came to me. And the guards came. And I said, Lord, what must I do? I'm so upset with the way these people killing and raping and homosexual. He said, Bishop, Moses, I told him to step back. I want you to step back, them that will follow you and listen to you, because I'm getting ready to destroy whole nations and generations for them disobeying the law of God. Word no more. God, to them that's on board, they're going to be all right. Them that are not on board, they're getting out of here. He said, I'll raise up a new nation that will obey me. You know, I was kind of upset with the homosexual stuff that's going on. And over in Africa, they didn't believe in that. They'd send you to prison. And I was saying, if over in Africa don't believe in homosexuality, why America pushing it? Why are the European countries pushing it? The war and murder, they pushing it. Dr. King was the prophet. Malcolm X was the Moses. Now, we didn't experience the Moses. We didn't experience the Abraham. So God is getting ready to rain down on daughters, mom, and sister. They got to be ready. And I think a divine healing comes with you obeying God. Because your friend is alcoholic, don't mean you're alcoholic. Your friend homosexual, and your friend mess with kids, that don't have to be you. But God told me, I want to share this with you, Exodus 14:14, I know what it meant. God said, Bishop, I already saw prophets. They won't listen to them. It must be taken over. It must be many deaths. And ain't talking about no COVID, nothing, deaths of them being disobedient to God. I think that's the most important thing, disobedient to God. Don't forget.
He talked about God. They had so many religions in Rome, it did not make any difference to them. And had he been the pacifist that everybody said he was, they would have welcomed him with open arms. So maybe you can cool some of these niggas out because they keep rebelling all the time. If you can walk throughout the land and get these big crowds out and cool these people down, why, you're a good friend of Rome. Rome hung him on a cross. And because of some charges that the Jews brought against him.
Hello, hello. Oh, hello, hello.
Let's go on.
Oh, hello, hello. That's on in a second. This is a marathon we're doing every now and then.
You have to understand what's happening to our people all over the world. Just a touch this evening. How do we get to the next level?
Oh, I better stop now. Y'all gonna get mad with me. The word devil is used in our Bible comes from the Greek word diabolos. And that's a person that keeps some mess stirred up. Diabolical stuff. Horrible stuff. Now you look in history and see who has been the most diabolical. Now I'm through with that. Let me get on back. So y'all get mad with me. I want you to get upset with me. I want you to look. I'm here talking in love today. I love you.
Okay, let's take a pause here. This is tapia.com. We want you to support this program. Cash App to tapia.com. This is Major. This is 13 hours of our Shango. The marathon continues.
Well, you know what I'm saying? We'll bring the truth to some of you and bring where you might be able to share the truth from 9 to 11 might be a break for you. And we're talking about how our minds been so plagued, our minds been so upset that we got to move to the next level.
If you're loving this, thumbs up, like.
Oh, but in Africa for over 10,000 years. So now when we come to Canaan, Biblos, who had been, the Canaanites who had been accustomed to red, purple people, the Phoenicians, as they were called, the Phoenicians, meaning red, purple, or mahogany-colored people, they, in trading with the Chemitans and having a colony set up there by the Chemitans, began to become the leader in Biblos of the paper industry from which books were sold and dispensed to the rest of the world. The books produced in Africa, distributed to the rest of the world. They became the book distributors of the world there in Canaan. So you see the relationship there between Cush and Mizraim and Put and Canaan, all related up there together, the sons of Ham, the hot-blooded ones. Now, I'm almost through. The Cushites go so far back in history, we do not have a date for that. What we do know is this. The first human beings that we can identify as being modern human beings, that is Homo sapiens. Now, what does that mean? See, I love to do this. I love to take the academic language and put it in terms that anybody can understand. I like that. I love to do that. Homo is human, right? Or man is what it's supposed to mean. It's supposed to mean human. It means something a little different. Sapiens means thinker. When you put sapien, it is supposed to mean wise thinker. So it's supposed to be wise thinking man. The first species to have that in the genus Homo. Now the genus Homo, genus, it means in the family of. The Homo genus may go back as much as 2 million years. You have the Homo habilis that is in the Homo genus, that's the handyman. You have the Homo erectus, that's the upright walking man, all of them coming out of Africa that invented fire and all that sort of stuff, and probably human speech. But it's when we get to the Homo sapiens that we can identify a full-fledged human being as we know him in the world today. And that goes back 200,000 years ago at least. Just think about that. Now, why do I like to deal with those dates that go way back there? Because they get so tired of my children being taught, and we being taught, that the history of the black man begins in 1619 when we step off a slave ship. That is not the beginning of my history. In fact, that's part of the downfall, that's the decline of my history. That's not anything. And so from then on, our history is spoken to us during Black History Month in terms of our contributions to. You know, black folks made contributions to, you know. No, we didn't just make contributions. We created it. It came from us. And that's being proven time and time again. White folks may not like it, but they can't do anything with it. Now, so I'm going to come back to that. Remind me where I was, man, 200,000 years ago. But I got to deal with this a minute. They challenged Dr. Ivan Van Schertemann. I know y'all got to go to work tomorrow, so just bear with me a little while longer. Just a little, because it's my last night here, and I'm trying to cheer as much as I can. All right. Dr. Ivan Van Schertemann was challenged by one of those, I forget which one, Midwestern University. You come on out here. Talking about, they came before Columbus. We're going to put our scholars and our academicians together, and we're going to tear you apart. So Brother Ivan said he went home and went in his library and started digging out stuff and charts and books, and he, for 2 weeks, he went on intense focus to get prepared for this debate, to make sure he had all his documentation in place, that his stuff was sharp and clean to the bone, cleaner than a bowl of Muslim chitlins. And he goes out to the Midwest. He dropped out all these books. I mean, they had two or three sky caps that had to come with all these books and stuff. And take him to get into the university. He's got his books laid out on the table. You know how Jeffries do. Dr. Jeffries got books laid all out. That's how I hope I do a seminar here one day. I'll bring all the books with me there. We get down. And then he brought his charts out and his map. White folks came with nothing. Absolutely nothing. Maybe a pen and a pencil. And when the debate was over, they said, well, so what? So what? We control the money that controls the institution. So what difference does that make? We do not accept this as valid scholarship. He said, but this is hard evidence. We do not accept it. That's how they dealt with it. One day, you all may have seen that. Dr. Ben was on TV debating some Jews. Now, they should have asked me. I told them, don't go on TV debate Dr. Ben. I won't do that. Don't do that. They were on television to debate Dr. Ben. He tore him up so bad, one of them just got up in the middle of the program, walked over and said, I don't have to take this. The only response he had was an emotional response. Well, what I'm saying to you is this. They cannot refute us in terms of hard evidence and documentation. They cannot do it. This is accurate scholarship. What the world has been functioning off is false knowledge and bogus scholarship that cannot be corroborated by anything substantial. Ours is even written in stone. In stone everywhere you go over the earth. I don't care where you put your foot, you're going to see evidence that the black race is there. Written in stone and places that you least expected to be. Now, coming back to that 200,000 years now. The human race developed out of that, the Bantu people who were there at the base of the foot of the mountains of the moon, Mount Kilimanjaro and Mount Kenya there, and the Wurundjeri mountain ranges at the mountains of the moon where humanity began, and then they fanned out into the rest of the world, out from Africa, and they went to the rest of the world and populated the rest of the world, and that is the only humanity there was in the world. There were no Caucasians to come on the scene until about 20,000 years ago. Now, we're looking at a difference of between 200,000 years, where you have black people spreading all over the earth, and 20,000, 10% of that time. Now, who do you think the minority is? Do you think we sat still for 180,000 years to wait for white people to come to teach us? How did we survive if we had to wait for somebody to come and teach us 180,000 years later how to have the arts and sciences of civilization? Of course, we know that's not true. These people found that the arts and sciences of civilization, I call them the Nubian Grimaldis. They called them the Grimaldis because the first remains they began to find, some of them that date back about 40,000 years ago, were found in Grimaldi, Italy, near Mentone, France. And they were buried in the fetal position, the way you're in your mother's womb, which definitely is an African trait. All the pharaohs that were buried with an image of Nuit, or an image of their wives on their coffins, because they wanted to take the female energy with them, because that's the only way you could make the transition from this life to the next life. Read African Woman, the Original Guardian Angel. They dug up not only in Grimaldi, Italy, but in Siberia and many other places around the world, in Spain, and Tripoli, Spain, and all those places. They dug these with the apricot features, the dolichocephalic heads, the long heads, and all the other features that we have as African people. They were clutching in their breast figurines, statuary of the African woman form. And some of those figures had wings on them, and that's where the concept of an angel taking you to heaven after death came from. That's in the book, African Woman, the Original Guardian Angel. It's right in there, and also have it on the tape, Black Woman, Queen Mother of the Universe. Now, out of these people who had this great reverence for the female, for the mother form, out of these people, somewhere in the midst of time, comes forth a race known as Cushites, the people of the sun. And Drusilla Dungy Houston tells us in the book, The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Cushite Empire, that they went all over the globe. Do you know that the Arabian Night tales that you read about, that you heard about, that came out of Arabia are actually the retelling of the adventures of Cushite sea captains who traveled all over the world? There was no place that they didn't go. They went to India. They went to Persia. The first Arabians were Cushites. These black people were everywhere. So now they also settled about 10,000 years ago. They began to settle in the valley between the two rivers, which the Greeks called Mesopotamia, between the Tigris and the Euphrates River. That area was then known as Sumer. And anyone who studies history knows that those people were black people. The black kids of Sumer, that's who they were. One of their most famous cities of all their great cities, you've heard of the seven cities that Nimrod founded and all that, which I can't get into tonight. One of their most famous cities of ancient Sumer, this great empire of Sumer, which I talk about in both books, in African Genesis and African Womanerism, Guardian Angel. I get detail in there. One of their most powerful and renowned cities in the ancient world was the city of Ur of Chaldea. It was in this city of Ur of Chaldea that lived a man named Abram, father of the hot-blooded father, or hot-blooded father, because the word Ham means hot-blooded, and Abram means father, or father, so hot-blooded father. He leaves Ur of Chaldea. Why does Abraham leave Ur? I'm coming to a close. I'm going to close with this story now. I'm sensitive to the fact that y'all do have to do things tomorrow. He is leaving Ur of Chaldea because for about the sixth time, there is an invasion headed that way. And the people who are invading the land brought such devastation whenever they came. They struck terror in the hearts of the people, destroyed the high moral society, and debased them down to the level of animals that anybody who had the means began to scurry and get out of that city before these detestable creatures known as Scythians would come. Now, who were these Scythians? Let me tell you about the Scythians a minute. Herodotus says that the Scythians said they were the youngest nation on earth. Herodotus also said that the Scythians said they were born of a viper woman. What does that mean in symbolic language? That's symbolic language. The woman of whom they were born was supposed to have mated with an African, Cadmus from Africa. She was a white woman. Now, I'm not proud of that, but that's the way history records it. In mating with that woman, Cadmus did not know that that woman had something that would cause him his death and many of his people. And the thing which he had was called the viper, the sting of the viper in those days. And in today's modern medical terms, it is called syphilis. This woman became the mother of the Scythian nation. Rogers tells us in From Superman to Man, which is a powerful book, that these Scythians, when they went into war, before they went into war, they didn't take baths. Seen that's been a problem with Europeans in their history. Didn't take baths. They said that now. They record that. Will Durant said that Queen Victoria had a bath twice in 1 year, which made her the cleanest woman in all Europe. Now, I didn't say that. White folks said that. I want to get that straight, okay? So you won't run out here and say, I ain't never coming back to hear him no more. You talk so bad about white folks. No, white folks say that about him too. This viper woman who had this disease that spread among these Scythian children, they did not take a bath. What they would do is go into the tent, and they would clean themselves through the smoke from him. And the particular hemp they were using was a narcotic, which that's the only way they would even clean up at all is to get high. Let me put it that way. They had to get blind just to get clean. Strange thing, isn't it? I don't have time to go into the psychology of that. Dr. Welkin has done it very well. And they would get high, and when they would ride in the battle, they would ride in the battle buck naked with a black cape on. And the first person that a Scythian soldier, would fell in battle, would knock down in battle, the first thing he did to that person was suck the blood from him. And that's where we get the concept of the vampires of Transylvania, with the black cape. You don't believe me? Look in the Time Life books on Greece. And when the Greeks were fighting the Romans, the Greeks went into battle with a helmet, a cape, buck naked, and a shield and a sword. Now, I don't know how. I can't fight buck naked. I got to have something on. I cannot do it. In my sinful days, when I was a young boy and didn't have no sense, I got caught in some situations I shouldn't be in when somebody was coming on, and I had to put my pants off them so I could do anything. And I'm not as proud of that as before I was saved. Let me put it that way. What did I say? But they go into battle back naked. Why? Because the first land that they conquered in battle. And I want you to learn from this, brother. And when you find yourself in those prison situations, you pass this on to them brothers in there. And I always pass it on to them when I go to those prisons to lecture. When they conquered them in battle, the first thing they did was commit a homosexual act, which was to complete the dominance over that individual. That is not Africa. Brothers in prison, be attacking and raping one another, that is bestial. That is animalistic. And if you do that to a brother, you belong behind them bars. You should stay behind them until you rot. I went, well, brother, you don't enter with Brother Chaka. You don't understand the prison lifestyle. You don't understand. I understand this. You're a man and not an animal. And when you come in here, they lock you up in here, and they lock you up in here proclaiming you to and declaring you to be an animal. And when you act like one, you justify that claim. That's what you do while you're in here. While you're in here, you get spiritually, get yourself hooked up, and you get to conquer your body, and you conquer your desires. I don't understand how in the world one man can have a desire for another man. I cannot even begin to imagine that. Especially after knowing woman. How in the world? That's because you see human sexuality as merely a physical or biological act. And you do not see it as a spiritual thing that it is. That's why. Okay. And they don't like it sometimes when I go in there and do it, but I get right on that. I mean, I jive right on it, too. I don't explain what. So the Scythians used to do all that kind of stuff. So now here these people were coming to Ur of Chaldea. Abraham said, look, family, we're skying up. We can't stay here. And the best place I know is to head for the motherland, head for Africa. So where did he go? He crossed over the Euphrates River, which is where the word Hebrew comes from. The word was Parafu, which means one who what? Crossed over the river. There was no such thing as a Hebrew nation when Abraham did that in 1675, before the common era. He crossed over, and when he entered into Kemet, he saw things he had never seen, not even in the city of Ur. When he saw the sentinel guarding the gateway to Kemet on the Nile River that had been sitting there for so many thousand years, this great and wondrous statue of, some say a female face, some say a male face, with a lion's body to symbolize the awesome strength of Almighty God is revealed in the lion, the African lion, and the serenity and wisdom on the face before Napoleon came many years later and defaced it in that way. This is what Abraham saw. When he walked in, Abraham could not read, Abraham could not write. There was no literary knowledge existing among the Hebrews or his family that we know of whatsoever when Abraham first hit there. That was the first Hebrew, and it was after their encounter with Mother Africa by the Nile that they began to develop any degree of civilization. And I don't have the time to go into the rest of the history tonight. I'll have to do part three when I come back. When I come back, I will trace it from Abraham through Jacob, through Isaac, on up through the time of the judges, and there's some stories in the judges. They got some chapter. I'll just go.
Thank you. I can't write it in the fact that he's a journal. be a little larger this year, but I've got to do things under $10, particularly to fill in the calendar. But even though we produced this one, I thought it was going to be 150 pages of hip-hop writing, Minister Brown. I couldn't stop writing up. It's all original. It's not the project. I care right now. I went out in the woods and screaming, how did you let me go on this one? And I couldn't stop writing. I didn't put all in there. I want you to see my mouth, but I had to stop it somewhere. And I had to borrow money from every which way direction. Couldn't take people back and call me a ripoff artist. So I'm going to pay it through again. I had to go through all that. This is the best book I have ever written. But it's not selling as the best book I've ever written. And I said, let me, because they're not aware of it. And I realized when the first published it and released it in July 15th last year, we went south and we went midwest, and that's where we did the promotion on it. Now, the book on the holiday, everybody knows about that, that brother was responsible for that. The one on God, Father, the Black Man's Destiny is cool. They can't keep it in the store. But this one is there kind of sitting there, and it shouldn't be. It is the best. What you have heard many talk about, I have went to, we have shown directly of the story that we'll be talking about in a minute of Genesis in the Bible, the origin of humanity. You've heard people say that it came from Africa to death. And some have, in their writing, our scholars have shown some of it. I went directly and showed how it came from, how the Bible story was taken from all these other different stories that Africans have established all over the globe. India, Persia, and there's a lot in this book, I believe, that in reading, and I've had people tell me that, that it will help to enhance the quality of their life, because these ancient concepts, even though they're kind of difficult, we're so far removed from them, and they're very ancient, you keep working with them, there's something inside of you that makes contact with them, and it brings about a change in your whole scope of life. And that's what we need to change this hope. And the reason why we're confined to these ghettos and slums is because we have been made to think on that level. Once we expand our scope, when our scope was large, we weren't on that level. We could build those gargantuan statues and pyramids, and not only in Africa, anywhere you go in the world, you're going to see great things built by Black people. I mean, huge. They would cut outside the mountains. They would cut out stuff that was 80 tons. They built back 80 tons. I don't have that 80 tons. I was like, long. Oh, out of one piece. They haul 80 tons. 500 miles or somewhere. 600 miles or somewhere else. Why could they do that? The Kemetans were little people. Yes. By statue, human statue. However, everything they built was huge.
Right.
Why? They may have been small in physical stature, but their scope of thinking was fast. Their scope of thinking was God-like, because the Creator thinks on a fast, cosmic plane. And it is not serving the Creator to confine our thoughts to just these conditions of the life. And we'll never be able to change these conditions until we learn to think beyond that. And that's one of the things, that's one of the things this book is designed to help you do. Let me get on now. Y'all all right? Can you give me a few more? You ready to see? We've got to go on that plantation, find everything, and got to travel in the streets and all that. Get you a little rest in, and get a little time there to relax and everything. We have to go meet them again. I don't use that term, man, because if he's a man, what does it mean? All right. That's more. Yeah, to let the child be over and back hold up. All right, brothers and sisters, we're going to go into scriptures here then, and Ezekiel, the first chapter, 26 to 28 verses. Read a scripture that is not commonly known to most people. And not only is it not commonly known, it's not generally understood. What it means is I have to be. And that is because the English in translating from the ancient tongues, first the Greeks were the first to translate from the ancient African tongues and the ancient tongues and all that, Hebrew just being another one of the family of African languages, did not have enough words in their language to have complete translation. But here was a younger language trying to translate from a much older language. So there's a lot of confusion in their translation. However, if you know your history, if you have keys to unlock the mystery, you can go in there and push out the proper language. We read that above the firmament that was over their heads was the likeness of a throne, as the appearance of a sapphire stone. Get this picture, I want you to keep these symbols in mind. And upon the likeness of the throne was the likeness as the appearance of a man above honey. And I saw as the color of amber, this man, as the appearance of fire round about it, from the appearance of his loins even upwards, and from the appearance of his loins even down, I saw as it were the appearance of fire, and it had bright round about. As the appearance of the bolt that is in the cloud on the day of rain, so was the appearance of the brightness from round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell to my face and I heard a voice. Now we deal with this. We're going to do African-centered exegesis in the seminary of like to exegesis. We're going to do an African-centered exegesis on the text today. Now, Mother Reverend Fellows, you know that prophecy, when the prophets write, they use symbolic language. The reason why they had to use symbolic language in that time was because when they were writing under conditions whereby they were being oppressed by another in a foreign land, they couldn't tell the story too plain, or it could get them hurt, get them harmed, get them killed, and if you never get that message, just like we talked about earlier, we were singing those songs that were folk songs on the plantation. And they had to sing them in that language. When they wanted to say freedom, they had to say Jesus in order to keep the master from messing with them. But we know what they meant, and they know what they meant, and how do we know by the result of what those songs caused? Because as a result of saying those songs, a lot of people got off those plantations. So they were using the code language for the folk who were coming to liberate and stop by there and get them. Same thing was happening here. Ezekiel was in Babylon. He was under the impression of the Babylonians. One group of black people were oppressing another. By the time that they came to Ezekiel, it was predominantly Eurasians there. Because they had taken the land from the original black people. I talked about that and explained and showed the transition which took place in this book, African Justice. The original Babylonians were very black people, king-head people, and they were called Akkadian Babylonians. The Babylonians who invaded the Semitic type, the Eurasian-looking ones, the mixed-up ones, the wannabes who came, they were called the Chastite Babylonians. They invaded about 1200 before the Common Era. Now, let's stop and explain what I mean before the Common Era. Not everybody in the world is a Christian. Not everybody in the world has to be a Christian to know God. Not everybody has to be that. There are five Muslim people who are closer to the Creator than many Christians. There are Buddhists who are far closer than both of them are, who meditate and get in tune every day. So we can't be arrogant and think what our system of belief is the only way that the Creator serves. And that means you got control over God. If you got the only way to it, you're going to tell him you only got one way to keep it because you. And his Creator has put people all over the planet with different cultural experiences. And our religion comes out of cultural experience. Yes. That's what it does. All people behold and conceive of a Creator in terms of their cultural experience. Yes. A psychology we conceive of it in terms of somebody else's culture experience or penetration. We conceive of a Eurocentric culture experience. We turn to look at some white God or some white Jesus somewhere. That's their cultural experience. It's not our culture. And I think it's sinful for us to view the Creator or see the Creator in our own cultural experience.
That's
and in our own image.
Now that's the truth.
Here at the Baptist, one time I think it was Jonathan, but Jonathan was the name, but one of the 10 Christians in law was always right to kill all that.
Right.
He stood up in his pulpit before at the Baptist conference with thousands and thousands of black people in front of him and said it was a sin before God to wear the hair, and that's what it happened. Now, who came to you to have no fear to fight a place? How did you get it? Just so I said, when you must have a person that's offended to God, and then the natural thing that God offered me again, then you are accusing the Creator of doing wrong, of making a mistake, by making people black.
Yeah.
All right. Y'all with me?
All right. All right.
Now, I think you have to use some code language there, and I've talked about one group of Africans who were being controlled by the Eurasians, who were oppressing another group, which were the Hebrews, which I was going to discuss with you in a minute. That can be my book. Dr. Bennett stated it all, Dr. Carr, all of it. It should be clear to anybody by now that has heard anything that these people were not called injustice, and that this is the tailor-looking people. They were people that looked like us.
Yes.
I'm going to deal with that.
All right.
Now, the title of our message today is You Shall Know the Truth, and the Truth Shall Set You Free. You know, people say it a lot. Assume. Listen to this. But see, first of all, let me tell you something. Lord, right now, I'm not trying to get a following. I'm not trying to steal anybody's thunder.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not coming to jump on any other black people. All you got is to deal with on my natural enemy. Now, if y'all don't do that, it's going to happen. It's my natural enemy. I have nothing to do with my natural enemy. I look out for them. I don't go out of my way to start pouring to them, but I know to protect myself against them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't help myself get out of line. So I'm not here to attack any system of belief.
Mm-hmm.
I'm simply asking that we get to the point where we do not allow a ceiling to be placed on our mental development, consciousness, and use our belief and blame it on God as an excuse for doing it. Now that happens.
Right.
Brother Malcolm says, if your religion doesn't motivate you, change your religion from what it is to what it all means. You need to revive you. Thank you. Bless God. Say, Lord, walk me in this. You know good and well, Creator doesn't want you to make it. Word truth. And I've got to stop and define this word truth because folks think that what they know, their religious belief or their concept of it is the truth. And there is none other. That's all the truth there is. Word truth. As used in the New Testament, from the text, I believe it's in the book of John, and the mother, I forget sometimes exactly where it is. I got to go over something, and I'm over that text for the third year. But Jesus is reporting to that said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. It comes from the, I remember translating it when I was in the seminary, from the Koine Greek or the common Greek language that the New Testament gospel was translated into, written in. Going Greek at that time, because Greek was the language of scholarship. And I remember translating the word from Lydia, which means according to the facts. It had nothing to do with the system of belief. It means according to the facts. That's what truth is. Truth is based on something concrete that you can substantiate with something tangible or some natural law. It has nothing to do with belief. Belief is altogether something different. You shouldn't even argue belief. You shouldn't debate belief. You shouldn't discuss belief. Belief is personal. You cannot prove or disprove a person believes. I don't mess with that because I don't know what a person needs to believe to keep them thought. However, I do have to make us aware of the historical reality. You can keep your belief and still deal with historical reality. Always make it a lot of things. So a lot of people are right when we come to you with these facts and say they're trying to take away death, they'll see him know it, and he doesn't mean that. But he's very, he reads everything. By it all, he says, yes, and you shall not go for it. He's a very good brother, very wise man, but he's always kidding us about the fact of trying to take it deeper. And we always tell him, we say, Dale, we're not trying to take it deeper. We're trying to make it real for us. That's what we're trying to do. So that's the thing. Let's talk about this truth for a minute, then I'll get into the text. And then we'll be ready to talk. There should never be, as I just mentioned, a ceiling on the truth. There can't be a ceiling on the truth because truth is ever unfolding.
Yes.
Truth is ever revealing.
Yeah.
Now, if you got the only truth, you don't stop truth. You done turn off the market. You ain't gonna get no more water. You done got all the water you need. You done got all the water there is for you. When you turn it off, just like what you understand, what you believe, it ain't no more. You done cut the faucet off.
Mm-hmm.
You have to leave the faucet on with the water to run. And that's how truth is. Truth continues to flow. So I tell you, every day, truth becomes brighter, a light becomes brighter, brighter, brighter to you. When you're born in the world, you figure that's all the truth. You know, something on something, something different. But as you grow up, you learn some other truth. You learn very about cornbread, couple of grains, truth like that.
Yeah.
I remember when I was growing up as a boy, we didn't, farmers, we had to live in when I was very young. We didn't have America. And therefore, we, every Saturday, my mother used to have to take us put us in front of the oven. Some of y'all may not know what I'm talking about. And take us and put us in front of the oven. In a tub, 10 tubs. I was scared. And I ended up flying in this oven. Okay, I know what I'm doing, boy. I was too scared to do all this. And I had to sit in that tub. When we moved in the first apartment, that we had a bam kitchen with six stretch out here. What do you think I did? When I was in a fool to go back and sit in this kid's tub in front of the stove. I didn't bring some hot beverage. But that's all. Then when I got to where they had a shower, man, you come get the shower. So what I'm saying to you, fellas, that's unfolding truth.
Yes.
The truth was the baby. You got to watch yourself to be in it. But in this is a part of time. However, my concept of that truth was limited to a Gentile. But then my concept of that truth grew, expanded when I got to a bathtub. And then when I got to a shower, I got to go show up. So my brothers and sisters, never put a seat.
Okay,
if I don't get no other idea, I'm going to get that one. Never put a stop on truth. Many orthodox religions try to put a ceiling on truth.
Yeah.
I mean, they prohibit you to think beyond the perimeter of their particular system of belief. Now, if any religion does that to you, it is not serving you. It is programming you to serve it. Not just the church is supposed to serve the people. Am I right now? You correct me if I'm wrong. Not the people serve it. That's what it's supposed to do.
All right, man. Y'all still, I don't have nothing long. Yeah, be patient.
All right. You know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. It's a view, an African-centered view of the Bible and religion. That's what we're going to be talking about here today. Now let me get into this text. We know at the very beginning of the scriptures, this particular scripture, in the book of Genesis, it starts out by saying, in the beginning, God. First of all, I mentioned it before, but I got to mention it again. The
on the planet, and you got as much like white women as you see,
look like somebody. You know, to think down so much is hard to get to the fact that you were the beauty queen on earth for over 200,000 years. The oldest statues created by human beings go back between 30 and 40,000 years ago, and they are all of them. The first image that anybody tries to duplicate. Why?
Because in those days, she was a redeemer of all creatures.
That's the big African woman, the original God in Eden. You deal with that. Okay, y'all still with me?
Into the text.
She's an above the firmament that was over there with the likeness of the throne and the appearance of a what? Sapphire stone. Now we're talking about prophetic language here.
Right.
In prophetic language, they use symbols to illustrate principles. What is the sapphire throne? Sapphire throne represents, this book has this book and I have in this book. They also will go into the books with you tonight, which I am all for better. You'll have to get the books. I can document. That's what I'm trying to say. All right. I'm going to tell you, I'm not getting back up. Based on over 30 years of research. So I didn't just come out there and just come back and tell you something that's amazing. You know, it's amazing because they found the kind of going around from there and there either. It ain't nothing new about it at all. The sapphire throne represents the lap of the Divine Mother, because all the thrones in the ancient world represented the lap of the Mother. The oldest thrones we know anything about, listen to that, were first built with on the African continent. We know first on the African continent, because they were the first people to have kingdoms and civilizations to rule over, because they're the longest lived and the oldest people on earth are black people. You cannot get around that. There's no way that you can get around it. All the facts are pointing to that reality, that the original people came out of Africa, that the Garden of Eden was originally in Africa by the Nile River. And if you read the book of Genesis carefully, it will tell you that the river Ehan is an Arabic, but you got to know the Hebrew to know that. That's what we get. We have translated back. All right. Now, the oldest throne was in Africa by the Nile River in the ancient kingdoms and empires of what was called Kush. The word Kush means people of the sun. The sun kissed the people. Not the arms. The sun. When the Greeks came along, they could not pronounce the K sound. So they came up with a word, and bird face to them. But the Arabian people were Cushites, people kissed in the sun.
All right.
Out of them came a people called Kemetim, the people of the soil, from which we get the word today, what? Chemistry. The word itself is a description of the people. Land, people from the black soil, from the land of the black. Is what chemist means and what the word chemistry means. Because the only soil on earth that contains all of the chemical elements that make up the human body is the black soil. Not the red soil, not the sandy soil. Only the black soil has all those chemical elements. And you have Dr. Phelps with a chemist. They can tell you that. And I've seen it when I was in a seminary, I was in a Bible school. And we've analyzed the soil, the various soils, and that's all. Now, they created the concept of the throne and the king, and in their literature, they state very clearly, and I do document it, an African woman, the original guardian angel, that it was the black woman who created the system of governance, who created laws to discipline the community, because the man was perfectly happy running wild in the woods, chasing after lions or elephants, whatever you say. Now, he didn't have to go hunting. It was the woman who made him domestic. It was the woman who planted the crops so that he stopped running and chasing fools to sit down and eat some food. He could take time to stuff else by chase food until they started. Right. The woman who set that situation up. Therefore, she put him on the throne because she said, I need the
one day as one of the government or nation, I got to take care of the arts and sciences of the nation. Since the Creator gave you the natural brawn and the power to defend us against any enemy, I'll put you on the throne, but you sit there about my power, because the throne is the lap of the mother, which the Greeks call Isis and the Ancients call Osiris. And you will see pictures of it. I got pictures in the book. When the Pharaoh sat on the throne, he was there that Osiris was receiving her baby child on her lap. The mother's lap was the throne of power, because it was from the mother's lap that what we came into this world, everlasting. That's how you came. So that's the seat of power. It gives you life, energy, strength. Nobody can be in the witness to you. Once you know who you are, and black men, no one is there, would never miss you. But that's how you mistreat the black woman, would mistreat your mom. You represent your mom, every black woman on earth. But I can't get into that now. Let me go on again. Cut this one down. So that's the throne we're talking about. You're talking about the black woman. Now, even in our setting here, we identify with this ancient concept because they were still in our subconscious and spirit to the with us, but we didn't understand where they came from. And we began to call black women who put their hands on their head and shake that finger and wag that head that no other woman can do and cut you with that tongue that no other woman can do. We call it satire. It became a negative connotation. Instead of a positive connotation of politics, of course you must say that. But sapphire is a part of a precious stone. So something of that. So even though we call it sapphire for acting that way, we use a term of affection to refer to you. Because sapphire is precious to be with it. So this man that says he sees in this text, Ezekiel 1st chapter 26 to 28 verse, he says, so are the license of the throne with the license of the appearance of a man. Alright? We got this beautiful, beautiful blue throne. Sapphire with the color of lapis lazuli, I mentioned, yeah. Alright? And I saw it as the color of a family. This man sitting on this blue throne had the color of a family. What is that? A golden brown. Golden brown, not white, not yellow, not red. Golden brown. I mean brown, brown, like this brother sitting back there in the room, that kind of brown. So I'm in brown. That is what it is you can saw. Oh, girl, you meet the text and follow the other. And he won. And he said that he saw also fire around it in the rainbow. And after describing all this, here's the key in the text. What was Ezekiel looking at in his vision that he's looking at in the sky? He's having a vision, the prophet Ezekiel, down by the river Shebah, in ancient Babylon. His people are being oppressed by another. And he called on God for liberation of his children. And the first thing he sees in the first chapter of the book that he's writing about his experience and his prophecy to his people, is he gets a vision of a throne in the air, sapphire throne, sitting on it is the image of a man that is golden brown in color. Who is this man sitting on the throne? What does this image represent? Knowing that prophetic language is what? Symbolically. Folks, in the book of Revelation can't be understood. The very book itself, the title of it, Revelation, means revealed. If you don't understand it, it means you don't know how to interpret it. Yeah. Hello, if you know your history, you can interpret it. One day when I come back, I'll be the 666. So it's very simple. Let me get back to it. Here's what Ezekiel tells you he saw. Not what Jehovah tells you he saw. All I'm doing is translating the text for you in the context of the historical experience and from the ancient Hebrew that it was written in the Aramaic, telling you what the word means that he's describing. That's all I'm doing. It's telling you what they mean. say the 28th verse. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. That's what it says. Y'all from the land of Israel, y'all stop talking about blackness, God don't know what color God ain't got no color. It's here, Ezekiel said, when he saw a vision of the glory of the Lord sitting on a sapphire throne to a golden brown mansion. It's right in the text. I'm telling you, God ain't got no color. True, the Spirit doesn't have a color. However, when the Spirit reveals himself to man, in early times, it had a color. Why was that? Because the only people receiving revelation at that time that were educated
Go lay down. See the strawberry moon. Hope you watch the strawberry moon as it's going out. People calling me. Never mind, asking about the strawberry moon. I'm looking at the strawberry moon and seeing what will happen. Come from my ancestors. We need two weeks of such strawberry moon. And you look at this like the moon coming at you. We're praying for you to call us tonight. Those who know that we are still working out the peace and something to look about. We're praying for those that are listening. Those come to us because of the knowledge that as we look and raise us, we are part of the line of Savior. All over the world, God is bringing me as the truth. And he brings the truth to make things of what God do. You know, you want to be sure you be God conscious. Not because you wear a suit every day. It's just because you have fascinated or seen some of the truth that you put to hell that he got belongs to you. And you turn around, how did you get over there? Well, transportation could be a lie. We have to go with, especially right, also called level grade. Our animal is more intelligent than we is because we know about the moon and all the other stuff. I said, don't forget that morning from 11 to 12. I'm bringing you the divine word from God. Thank you for calling. Thank you for staying hooked up. I want you to know God will bless you in a divine way.